All right, let's say it up front. It's not Bob's fault. Say it again. It's not Bob's fault. But Bob Wallace worked for the football Cardinals, and they packed up and left town. And then Bob worked for the St. Louis Rams, and they packed up and left town. Bob Wallace is the focus of the Kilcoin Conversation, longtime NFL executive, played college football at Yale, then became a lawyer and started doing contracts for the Big Red. And back then, Bill Bidwell had a law firm in town, the Guilfoyle Law Firm, and Bob worked there, and he was in charge of contracts. So got his first taste of the NFL, ended up working for the Philadelphia Eagles, and then when the St. Louis Rams came back here, he started working for them, executive vice president for many years. So great to catch up with Bob about everything that's going on with Kroenke, the lawsuit. And I don't think Bob's been deposed because he left the Rams, I believe, in 2010. I should probably know this at this point. But he does have some clients that are connected to the case, so he has to be a little bit careful. Who in St. Louis at this point has not been deposed? Me. And I know a few things, but Bob is somewhat connected to the case, so he can't tell all that he knows, but certainly knows the league, the NFL. When he would travel with the Rams, if John Shaw, the team president, wasn't there, Bob would go have dinner with Stan Kroenke the night before a game because, you know, Stan was the minority owner coming to town to watch games. Working for Bill Bidwell, that's interesting. Working for Georgia Frontier, that's interesting. And then living in St. Louis for, boy, on and off, but mostly in St. Louis for 30-plus years, and to see what's going on with the NFL in our town, including the lawsuit. Great time to catch up with Bob. And we did it recently at Sportsman's Park. And I didn't know till the end of the interview. I was like, wait a minute. The seat he picked, he was there before I got there. There's a picture of him hanging on the wall behind me with Tom Eagleton as the Rams were moving to St. Louis. There are just so many stories from over the years. You know, great stories. But Bob was always great to deal with on the Rams side. Kind of ran the building, especially with John Shaw living in L.A. You know, you had Charlie and Jay running the football side, and Bob ran the building, the business of the Rams. And he was doing football contracts at a really young age for Bill Bidwell and was there when they were getting ready to move. And nobody knew what the heck was going on, including the Bidwell kids. They would ask Bob, you think we're going to Baltimore? I think we're going to Phoenix. Nobody knew. And I agree with Dan Dierdorf. If you just figured out a way back then to keep the Big Red, the football Cardinals, then none of this other stuff would have happened. Just get it done. Find a way. Build the stadium. It was basically a baseball stadium. And Bill Bidwell leaves for the desert in Arizona, and he doesn't get a stadium for like 20 years. That's what's crazy about it. I mean, it's one thing when you up and move because you got a better deal. Think about that Arizona move. They played at ASU. I went out there a number of times when the Rams played the football Cardinals. It was at ASU, Tempe, College Stadium. It wasn't some luxurious NFL pad. So Bidwell moved out there, but it took forever. And now they're a very successful franchise. They got a nice stadium and all of that. But at the time of the move, he just basically said, I'm out of here, because he couldn't get anything done in St. Louis, even though in Phoenix it didn't get done. I'm trying to do the math in my head. I mean, I think it was close to 20 years when they got out there before they got that stadium. Just insane. We should get Michael Bidwell. That would be a great guest on the show. I'm not sure he wants to do it, especially since he's involved in the lawsuit. Everybody is. Everybody's named. Every owner, every team. Nonetheless, Bob Wallace is the guest on the Kilcoin Conversation. I think you'll enjoy this football talk. It's presented, as always, by Marie Davila Senior Living. Christmas tree is up at the corner of Clayton and Weidman Road. Just the latest example how festive they are at Marie Davila Senior Living. Whether it's a villa, estate, assisted living, whatever type of senior living you're looking for, they have it. Take a virtual tour at mariedavila.com. Also, our great friends at B&G Tuck Pointing. I was just at Fast Eddie's with Rich Galati, and we were talking about how it's a family business. And nothing exemplifies that more than the name, BG. Bella and Gabby, those are his daughters. BG. TuckPointing.com is the website. Number to call for a free estimate for Tuck Pointing, foundation repair, waterproofing, 363-0525, 363-0525. The number to call, find out why they are the best in the bricks, B and G, Tuck Point. Also, Appliance Discounters, theappliancediscounters.com is the website. GE rebates available, great General Electric merchandise, washers, dryers, stove, refrigerator, whatever appliance you're in the market for. Not only should you get it at Appliance Discounters, but you will get it fast. And all of these supply chain issues, well, the good news is Appliance Discounters has the 80,000 square foot warehouse in downtown St. Louis. Check them out in person or online, theappliancediscounters.com. Find out why their savings are your savings. And Triad Bank, St. Louis-based bank since 2005. Stop by and see them in person. Home loan, car loan, business loan. Maybe you're trying to expand and you want to talk to some folks that are based here that understand the local climate. That's what Triad Bank is all about. The CEO, Jim Regna, grew up here, North County. Went to Rosary High School. He knows the lay of the land all around St. Louis. TriadBanking.com or in person on Clayton Road in Frontenac. Here's our conversation with Bob Wallace.
This is the most St. Louis thing. Hanging at Sportsman's Park with Bob Wallace, and there are pictures all around here where there's the Big Red, there's the Rams. Oh, and oh, by the way, the table we're sitting at, there's a picture of Bob Wallace with Tom Eagleton. A lot of football in your DNA, right?
A lot of football. That's a picture of Tom and I when we first moved here in 95, and Tom was showing us around town looking at places to build a practice facility. So we're out in near Spirit of St. Louis Airport. We went over down near the river to look for places. I guess there was an old pipe fitters union down there. And then we ended up out in Nurse City.
Because of your history with working for the Rams as a higher-level executive, working for the Big Red and Bill Bidwell, seeing both teams leave, I'm not blaming you, Bob, but you have to be more than a passive observer of all things that are going on. All, and really, with the discussion of what's happened with the team leaving, it's sort of like the history of football in St. Louis. You probably know it as well as anybody about the two teams that have left.
Yeah, I think I probably do know it. I had the experience of working with two teams that have left. I'm not sure there's anybody else in the National Football League who's had that experience. I'll never forget being in an elevator at a league meeting and somebody, and that's just, I think I was coming back to St. Louis from Philadelphia, and they said, "You've worked for some interesting people, Bob. You worked for Bill Bidwell, Norman Brayman, and then Georgia Frontier."
And so let's start by, because Dan Dierdorf on a previous segment has said, if we had kept the football Cardinals, we would have never had the Rams. We wouldn't be talking about all this stuff now. Take us back to the era. What was your role then when the Bidwell era was coming to an end in St. Louis?
Well, I was a lawyer in the law firm that represented him, and I did the day-to-day work for the football Cardinals. Tom Guilfoyle was the was Bidwell's confidant, lawyer, and all that. But I worked for Tom. I did all the player contracts for the Cardinals for 10 years. My Dan Dierdorf story is that I was a ball boy for the Cardinals, not because I knew anybody, because I had any real connection with the Cardinals. I had a connection with someone who worked for the NFL. And Dan was a first or second year player, and he always tells a story. Yeah, we used to take Bob up in the locker room and throw our dirty jocks at him. And then my last year, I walk into his law office, and he says, God,
he says, it's going to cost you.
He says, it just shows you, you better be nice to people on the way up because you never know when you're going to run into them. And Dan would tell that story when he did Monday Night Football and we'd be in Philadelphia. And I helped write the application when we moved. So when we negotiated the deal to move to Arizona, I was involved in that. It was a funny story that we never really knew where the Cardinals were going. We gave Bill Bidwell two applications to move, one to Baltimore, one to Arizona, and he got on a plane to go to New York to meet with Pete Rozelle then, and we were not sure. I mean, we thought we were going to Arizona because we had negotiated with Arizona State to use their facility, but we weren't 100% sure.
And so how do you find it? So you're working for the St. Louis Football Cardinals. You got a family and a wife, and it's like, are we leaving? Are we staying? I mean, how did that process play? Was it similar at all to the Rams? I mean, it wasn't as much media, probably, But that had to be a little tenuous, not knowing where the hell you're going the next year.
Well, it's yes, it was, and not knowing whether you were going to get to go. You know, and I always laugh is that the kids, the Bidwell kids, who I knew since they were young people, being the family lawyer on top of being the football cardinal lawyer, I would help them when they would get in a little trouble. Bill would always laugh, "What are you doing for my kids?" Well, you know, they snuck into a swimming pool. And so I had to go out and tell the owner, "Okay, we'll take care of that." But they would ask me, "Where are we moving?" And I would say, go home and say to them, you know, my girlfriend at the time, and now my wife, I said, "They don't know where they're going." I said, "What do they talk about at dinner?" I'd ask him, "Dad, where are we going to live next year?" But they didn't know either. So it was he was a very tight-lipped, I'm not even sure Guilfoyle knew.
Could St. Louis, why didn't it get done? And I was following it. I was a fan, but I don't really remember. Dan says the political folks blew it. What were, remind me the dynamics there.
I think the political folks did blow it. I work out at Lifetime Fitness. I see McNary there working out. And I said, you were a visionary. You had the picture of building the stadium. But then he and Shamel kind of got sideways and they couldn't agree. And then the business community, because Bill was a different guy, didn't support him. And so they kind of said, we don't need him. We'll get another franchise, or let him go. He's a terrible owner and all that kind of stuff. And so the combination of political leadership, infighting, and no business support. And then remember we're going to build a new stadium, and Bill said we're not going to sell beer, and that was a bad thing when the two people that ran.
Why did he say that? Just to piss him off?
I don't know. We never. What are you saying?
You can't have football without beer.
Right. You can't have football without beer, right? And not in
take his team away at that point.
Right. Not in St. Louis, you couldn't with August Bush and Civic Progress was a big, and Chuck Knight and August Bush were, they basically were the leaders of the community and that stuff. So that didn't help. So it was. But he Bidwell never was down on St. Louis. He loved living here. I think he liked having his family grow up. He didn't want to move, but he figured out early on that he could not compete in the NFL, because the difference between teams being really successful and not being successful was stadium revenue. And that's a little bit different now because the NFL shares so much revenue. But at that time, stadium revenue was really, really, really important.
Well, wasn't Pittsburgh playing in their Three Rivers, and the Bengals were in Riverfront? They all kind of had the cookie cutter stadiums. I mean, maybe it was starting to change then, and I'm just right, I wonder who gave him the idea, because I feel like stadium revenue, of course, that's a dollar figure, but who said to him, "Hey, you need a new stadium," or did he figure that out?
He figured that out. I mean, as I said, he was ahead of the time when then, but then they all shortly followed that. Remember that right around, what it is, 86 or 87, the Eagles, Philadelphia, the fourth leading market in the country, threatened to move to Arizona.
I didn't remember that.
Okay. Yeah, right. They were going to move to Arizona first.
Was there ever a good stadium? I know McNary, I think, was always about putting it on the river in the county. Was there ever a real – was there any traction ever to keep them? Or was it always like it just never got anywhere?
McNary had some traction. He had some traction to keep them, and they wanted to go to the Earth City area. And for a while, he and Shamel had an agreement to do that. And then that kind of fell apart. So that was a real effort to keep them. There was never a downtown stadium option back then.
So Shamel would have been hesitant because it's losing a city resident, more or less.
I think the business community told him that.
And so when they went to Phoenix, you didn't go, right?
I commuted.
I commuted. What are you, John Shaw? You commuted.
I did. That was great. I wasn't married then. So I spent probably 200 plus days in Arizona and the rest of the year here. So I would go out, spend a week. I was smart enough to figure, go out to Arizona in February, January, February, when it was cold here in St. Louis. Phoenix was a lovely place to go visit. I made some great friends out in Arizona, people that we negotiated, people at Arizona State became friends for life. So I really enjoyed that. And then I'll never forget, I was sitting, I did get married in 89. I got married, I got engaged out in Flagstaff, where...
NAU.
No, not Flagstaff. Where's the other place? With the Red Rocks.
Oh, Sedona.
Sedona, which is interesting because that's where Georgia ended up being from. So
It was in the crystals.
It was in the crystals, right. And sitting out in February saying, boy, this is beautiful. We should get buy a condo. I'm going to go to Bidwell and say, let me buy a condo here. You don't have to play for hotels. I'll just come out when I can. And then I got a job with the Philadelphia Eagles. So, I mean, I kind of wanted to move in-house instead of just being a lawyer from the outside. I mean, Bidwell loved the sort of the fiction that he created, that I was an outside lawyer doing their contracts. So whenever it went bad, he could blame the lawyer. But after the first year, that was kind of a ridiculous fiction. The same guys, you can't blame the lawyer all the time. If you're blaming the lawyer, you got to get a new lawyer, right?
Right. You work for the team. Good cop, bad cop. Right, good cop. What was your worst negotiation? Do you ever have one where a guy still hates you or, like, stormed out of the room?
I don't know if there's – well, Kelly Stouffer probably still hates me. I mean, that was probably one of the worst ones. Remember, his agent, I mean, he stayed out the whole year. And it was a year before we moved to Arizona because we ended up trading him for Kenny Easley and some other people. And then Easley had a kidney disease, so we never got him. He was a good player, too, but he ended up retiring. And then his agent was a guy named Mike Blatt, who got charged with murder from Bow and Arrow, and we're hiring someone to bow and arrow a guy to death. So that was a pretty scary negotiation. And then
if you'd only known, you might have got the deal done.
Right. And then there was Clyde Duncan, who had a guy named Everett Glenn, who was sort of and I say this in quotes because sort of that my way or the highway terrorist kind of negotiation that you had, and that was a nasty one. But we had some really nasty negotiations. That was one of the reasons that they brought me in. And Tom started doing negotiations before is because the Cardinals always had to remember they were known for notorious holdouts. You know, Otis Anderson was a nasty one. Terry Metcalf. Some of those guys ended up leaving because Joe Sullivan was doing the contract. And he was just a really hard guy to get along with. So they brought me in. And we kind of smoothed over negotiations for a while. You know, I mean, Roy Green and I are great friends now. Otis and, you know, all those guys, some of those players, Stump Mitchell, that I negotiated against. You know, we're still pretty friends. I was, you know, 28 years old negotiating with guys that were either younger than me or right around my age, other than Dan.
was Bill a tightwad, or was he just aloof to the business of it, or was he smarter than the most and said, don't give him? I mean, what's fair on him?
What's fair is we were a low-revenue team. I mean, he was not a zillionaire at that point. You know, I mean, the franchises now, they all are worth $1 billion. They're all billionaires now because they got an asset that's worth $1 billion. And he was, he made most of his money off of the business of football. And it was a tight business. You know, the television contracts were not, you know, $300 million per team. So he watched the budget. He didn't, you know, he was probably old school where players didn't make the kind of money that they were about to begin to make. So, you know, he had a hard time, I think, adjusting the, you know, going from a $40,000 a year contract to a $300,000 a year contract, which is, you know, half of what the minimum is right now. Right. So, I mean, it was just a different time. But I would say, I mean, and someone asked me this the other day, what is your favorite time? And, you know, working for Bidwell was one of them. I mean, he and I, you know, we battled a lot. But we got along, you know. And after I left, we stayed friends until his death. I spent some time with him right before his death. Went out to see him, and Michael and Nicole let me sit down, and we sat down. He was really not in great communicative, but I think he was. They told me he was really happy to see me, and that made me feel really good. That, you know, I got to say, 'cause he gave me my start in this business. I mean, he gave me my start at being a football person. You know, I wrote letters to various teams. I said, I worked for the Cardinals as a ball boy in 1971 because I had a friend in the NFL office who knew I liked sports and said, hey, I can get you a job working as a training camp ball boy. Would you like to do that? I said, yeah, that'd be great. He says, well, you can go to Chicago or St. Louis. I said, I don't care. So he said, no, I didn't care. So I spent the summer in St. Louis. Well, actually, it was
because you're a New York guy. I was wondering about that. How you're a ball boy in St. Louis.
I had a friend at the NFL office, and then so the Cardinals traded Lake Forest. So we went to Lake Forest. I spent the summer there. I stayed in contact, you know, whenever they played in New York, or they played in New Haven. I went to college when they played at Yale.
By the way, this is former running back star at Yale, right?
No. A former running back, not a star. Okay. Right. I'll tell you my story about that in a second. I finished this story. Like when they come to the Yale Bowl, I go to the game in Washington when I went to law school. So I wrote, and then I worked for the NFL in between my second and third year of law school in a summer program at the summer intern. I was the first intern the NFL ever had. Unfortunately, they didn't make me the commissioner where I could make $128 million over 2 years. Roger Goodell was an intern after me. And then I wrote a letter, and Bidwell wrote back, said, "Hey, I'm going to be in New York, Washington, D.C. for a retirement meeting. Would you like to meet for dinner?" Being a poor law student, yeah, chance to meet with an NFL lawyer for dinner. Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah. I went, and he said, "You know, I like the fact that you go to Georgetown. I went to Georgetown. You're a ball boy for my team. I was a ball boy. I'm looking for a young lawyer. Would you come out to St. Louis and interview with my law firm?" And that's how I got to St. Louis. Didn't know a soul here. Didn't know anything about St. Louis. Just got in my car on graduation from law school, drove out to St. Louis, and I've been here, I guess, what, 40 years, 36 out of 40 years of my professional life.
So Bill Bidwell gave you your shot in the NFL, and then you work in the league for close to 30 years. Georgia as an owner, and we talked to John Shaw and Rick Smith, the old PR guy, but maybe overly maligned. I got the sense, was Georgia a little bit different or unique? For sure. But I got the sense she let everybody just kind of do their job, though.
Yeah, she was a little different. I mean, the things that we would complain about Georgia were minimal. And, you know, the coaches would complain or other people would complain about her, you know, "Oh, our media guy's, you know, not out yet. She won't pick a picture for the media guy." I mean, she's not telling you a quarterback to play, you know. Right. Get a grip. You know, these are minor problems. You know, and as John said, I listened to his interview that he did with you. You know, the dinners were rough. You know, I didn't have to do many of them, but I did some. I'll never forget being
Martin, they lasted 3 hours.
We did a New Year's Eve party. She had a New Year's Eve party 1 year, and Orlando was hurt. And so he came to the New Year's Eve party, which didn't start till 10:30. Dinner was not till 12, and we're like laughing at Orlando. "You'll never get hurt again, will you?" Because you'd have to show. And then we're sitting there at 2:30 at the Ritz-Carlton trying to get our car to leave, and my wife says, "I'm going to go tell her that we're still up. We got kids in the morning." I said, "Yeah, just calm down, dear. We're not going to do any of that." But, yeah, the dinners were rough. And, you know, I went out to Sedona a few times, you know, being on the ranch and the Sear there. And, you know, I mean, you had to kind of kiss up to the queen, but she wasn't mean-spirited. You know, John had to deal with her, you know, more than anyone.
When you were at the Rams in the building through 08, Stan didn't buy the team until 2010, but he was a part owner, and I guess he would come. I know he had an office that was always sitting empty. He had a nice office.
Leather floors?
Yeah. Okay. I was never in the Kroenke office. Did you deal with him at all?
Yeah, you know, Stan and I got along. I mean, you know, he was a minority owner. He had no power. John had more power than him, and Stan had invested $40 million. John didn't invest anything in it, but John was, you know, as we were talking, you know, John knew how to play the game, and he was very solicitous for Stan. I mean, he would ask his opinion. Stan was involved in, you know, the facility design, Earth City was in the uniform design. He would tell him what was going on. I mean, he treated Stan like an owner. You know, I went to see Josh play basketball a few times and met Stan on the road. If John wasn't there, or Jay wasn't there, and it'd be me and him eating dinner, you know. I mean, so yeah, I mean, he was a much more, I don't think he was as, what do they call that?
Aloof
or different or eccentric back then as he is now. Okay. I mean, since I left, if I've said more than hello to him, that would be saying a lot.
Do you have either a professional opinion or a personal opinion that he always wanted to take that team to LA, or do you think that just came along at some point in his mind?
I don't think he always wanted to take him along. I think when he bought into the franchise, that's not what he wanted to do. But I think his time came and he saw, you know, that there was this gold mine opportunity. I mean, he was going to have to invest a boatload of money to get the opportunity. But you know, he's a real estate developer, a billionaire with a lot of money, who likes money. I think he saw an opportunity to make more money and took it.
And when the Rams leave, so you were here, the Big Red leaves, you're here, the Rams leave, you're at that point. When did you leave the team officially?
I don't even remember. It was probably 2010, okay. 2011. I started at Thompson Coburn in 2012, so I had some time left on my contract, so I enjoyed that.
So when they left, what was your emotion then?
You know, it was, I didn't really care that much because I was no longer a Rams fan. I'm a huge NFL fan. I love watching football. My Sundays are watching football. And I love NFL football. I love watching it. I'm a Dolphin fan now because I'm a son who works for the Dolphins. That's a hard thing to be right this year. But I was kind of indifferent for them. When you're in the business, you root for teams because you know somebody there. You either like them or dislike them, and that sort of determines how you're going to, you know, whether. And I root for African American coaches in the league to have success.
But you weren't like crying when they moved. You were like, yeah, well, you kind of, and a lot of folks said, well, I saw it coming. What about you?
Once 2015 came, or once 2014, I mean, I had enough knowledge that they had indicated that they didn't really want to engage in negotiations about this, about staying here, what it could be.
Because part of your job with the Rams, right, was to deal with the city, the CBC, about the dome upgrades?
Yes, I did that for until I left. And back in 2000, it's very funny, back in 2002 or 3, the lease provisions that are sort of head in the lease that we would start looking at the first measuring date, which was 10 years in. So we started, myself and John Oswald and Bruce Sommer and Brian McMurtry from the Dome, we went on a sort of a whirlwind tour of some of the new stadiums. I mean, there was an influx of new stadiums. There were 8 or 9 new stadiums built in between 2000 and 2005 when the measuring date was coming. And if an owner was going to build a new stadium, he wasn't going to make it a worse stadium than one of the old ones. So you knew by definition that you weren't going to be in the top 8 stadiums if there are more than 8 stadiums built. So John made a decision, and Dan Dierdorf was the head of the
CBC
at the time.
Yeah.
And Dan, and so we would meet Dan and Kitty Radcliffe and myself and John, and the first hour of the meeting, Dan and John would be telling Al Michaels stories, but they clearly reached. Dan realized the stadium had some work to be done. John realized that within 10 years we couldn't tell the people of St. Louis that we were moving, so we kicked the can down the road, and we spent $30 million to design various upgrades to the stadium.
And they would do Jumbotron and speakers and LED lights or whatever.
New hospitality areas that they built up. But John insisted all along that he didn't think the stadium was first tier, and $30 million wasn't going to make it first tier either. He said, I don't have the heart to go tell people, either you make the measuring dates, get us in the top 25%, or we're leaving in 2005. So we kicked it down.
So like John Shaw would just kind of like, just leave it alone more. Like do a little bit here or there, but
right.
We
got to do something, and we really got to address the issue because the stadium, by 2010, there were 21 new stadiums that were run. And again, by definition, it's like you own a house in Chesterfield, and you got one of those $200,000 homes, and all the other homes are worth $4 million, and you say you're going to put $20,000 into this new home, your $200,000 home, it's not going to be as nice as the $2 million homes. And that was the problem that they had.
And so they leave town, and we're all like, oh, well, it happened, or over it. And then the lawsuit sort of percolates. Now, you're a lawyer, so you understand it probably better than most. Did you think it would ever have legs, I guess, is my thought, early on?
I'll be honest with you, probably not, because, every city that has lost a team has engaged in some sort of, mainly Oakland, but has engaged in some sort of litigation, and none of them have been all that successful. So history was that this one, what was going to make this one different.
So you're a football guy who's also a lawyer. How close are you watching these developments?
Pretty closely. I mean, pretty closely. You know, I represent the Convention and Visitors Commission now. It's one of my clients. And so I watch it. Although they're not a party to the lawsuit, I do watch, you know. They did play in that stadium. So it's an interest to me as both a lawyer, a sports lawyer, and a football fan, and someone who's been involved in relocations of franchise. So I follow it pretty closely.
You spent 3 decades working in the league, the NFL. The league takes a lot of hits. I think a lot of it warranted, too. Are you ever at odds with, like, how the league is run or how they, like you love it because it's a great game, it's a great brand, ever disappointed in how they act?
Yeah, I mean...
Do I need to redirect?
Yeah, I mean...
Taking the fifth?
Obviously, you know, things happen in real time. They make decisions that, you know, upon hindsight, you're not in the arena. You might say, ah, that was a bad decision. You might have a bias involved, you know, right now, with something involving the Dolphins, I might not like that. I mean, if they didn't reverse that call yesterday, I would have been upset about that. But, it's the world's most populous sport. As Jim Thomas used to say, this may be a baseball town, but it's a football nation, and that's true.
And so what do you think the league will do? Or do you have any – as you're just sitting around at Sportsman's Park with me kicking around ideas, do you think expansion will ever be offered, or do you think the city has to ask for it?
You know, I think
– I don't know what to believe. They say, oh, it's on the table, it's not on the – there's always a pundit here or there. I'm not sure what's accurate.
Yeah, I don't know what's on the table, Martin, because I'm not involved in the negotiations. I wish I was. I think it would be a lot of fun to be. I think I could probably add some value to it, but I'm not involved in the negotiations for what it was. But I think whenever there's a risk on both sides, whether it's $1 billion or several $1 billion, which is what the number you hear St. Louis thinks they're capable of getting, or whether it's losing everything, there's risk on both sides. And, you know, spending, not getting a verdict on it. You know, the NFL's history has always been they may lose at the lower courts, they win on appeal, or they settle it. So I think when you're talking about settlement, there's all sorts of ideas that could come into effect. Whether there's a $1 billion check in writing or a $500 million check, that's whether expansion is a way of not having to write a check, but take less than you have, but you get a new market or a market that's, you know, and I don't think anybody would tell you that St. Louis City or St. Louis, the St. Louis region did not support the two football teams that they had. Bidwell never complained about the attendance, the fan base. I guess Stan did a little bit on the way out, but, you know, as we were saying earlier, the Dome from 1999, really from 1997 through 2005, was as tough a place as in the NFL to play a game as it was. It was loud. It was exciting. You couldn't go to the bathroom in 99, 2000, 2001 in the first quarter because you'd come back to your seat and the team might be up. You might have missed 3 touchdowns. Right. I mean,
And having seen some bad football with the Big Red and with the Rams early years, how much, and I talked to the Warners the other night, and their story now is on, I mean, who would have thought Kurt Warner would end up being on a Hollywood movie? But when that happened, how crazy was it? That when the team, the Rams, I mean, the losingest team in the 90s became the best team in football. I mean, that had to just be surreal.
You know, when, it was funny, Kurt had kids that were, you know, his daughter's my son's age, and I'll never forget being on a Parkway West at a basketball game on a Sunday morning, and there's this guy standing over in the side, this might have been 98, watching his daughter play basketball. And I said, I know that guy. I know who that is. And I went up and said, hey, I'm Bob Wallace. Oh, I know who you are. He's Kurt Warner. Had no idea who he was. Didn't even, the next year, he couldn't have stood in that gym by himself. And when Trent got hurt, you know, we're devastated. You know, I'm sure you've seen the picture of Marshall slamming his hand down on the ground and Isaac's head down. People were walking around the office. I'll never forget calling the business staff together and saying, if you see a coach, you smile and say hello to him and don't walk around and say, we can't have a sense of doom around here. And then Kurt came on and just, you know, I mean, the first game against Baltimore, a guy throws 3 touchdowns. I mean, you know, just so it was an amazing story. So we always used to tease John about what deal he made with the devil.
It's a weird job too. You're in charge of the building because you got to tell your staff things like because coaches are weird, players are weird, like the vibe, the emotion. Really, that's part of running an NFL team, isn't it? Make sure the whole building stays upbeat even when the team's getting their ass kicked.
You know, it's culture building. Building an organization is culture building. I'll never forget after 98, we did sort of, you know, might have been not a popular term back then, but we did a 360 evaluation of our team, of our organization, you know, and, you know.
Let me guess, John hired some consultants.
No, actually, okay. I did it. Right. Actually, I did it. I put together a team of members from different parts of the organization, and we wrote a really good report. I mean, it's a really good report. You know, we have to empower people. We have to, you know, work more as a team. We're too siloed. There are too many consultants running around. And then the next year, we go, you know, 12-4, win the Super Bowl. I'm not sure we fixed the problem, but winning covers everything. So
yeah.
I'm not sure we addressed some of those issues. We did another report in 2005. Where were we after that? We still had some of the same problems. But winning covers all, covers up the smell.
And if, final thought here, if the NFL came back, in whatever form or fashion, I don't know if it's from the lawsuit, I'm of the belief that that's not even going to happen. But if it did, you think the city would rally around it, or do you think enough people are still bitter that they'd say, blank you, and wouldn't show up?
I go back to what I said. It's a football nation, and, you know, NFL football is great. You know, again, as we mentioned earlier, I'm from New York. My friends and family don't know a lot about St. Louis, but they did know we have a baseball Cardinal team, we have a St. Louis Blues, we're going to have a soccer team too, and they always saw the NFL football Cardinals, Dallas versus St. Louis, that runs across the bottom of ESPN. And I think it's very prestigious to have a professional team in one of the four major sports.
All right, so I have to know, did you pick that table over there because your picture's on the wall? Is that why we sat there?
Yes. Absolutely. I told her, I said to her, I'm making him sit there again. I pointed to the waitress, and she said, hey, that's you, right? That's one of the reasons I get the Larry Wilson burger when I come here all the time, and I get to see my picture. And they promised me they would not take it down because the person who owned, I think Bidwell.
It's a little unfair. You rubber glued it to the
right.
Cement.
Bidwell owned this place. He was a part owner with Norm Probstein, and who was his business partner in hotels and travel agency. And Norm's son Jimbo runs this place now. Owns it and still runs it.
Boy, a lot of fun with Bob, and you get the feeling that if he didn't have somewhere to be, I didn't have somewhere to be, we could probably talk for like 3 hours. I mean, you could just do, and some of the Kroenke stuff, maybe the inner workings or being around the guy, you don't want to tell all if you're in his position. You and I would tell all, but people like Bob probably don't want to let out every little detail, but I could sit and talk NFL story. We could have done a half hour just working for Norman Braman and the Philadelphia Eagles and the dynamic of the Philly fan. But appreciate Bob being on the show. We'll probably do it again. He's still a practicing attorney at Thompson Coburn in downtown St. Louis. The Dome is one of his clients. So still involved in St. Louis and sports and football. But been around some interesting people. Bill Bidwell. That's the podcast right there. It's just the Bill Bidwell podcast. But appreciate Bob hopping on the show. You can always get the Kilcoin Conversation on Spotify or iTunes, and every segment is posted at scoopswithdannymac.com. Thanks to our great sponsors, Triad Bank, Appliance Discounters, BG Tuck Pointing, B&G Tuck Pointing, the best in the bricks, and Marie Davila, Senior Living, MariDeVilla, MariDeVilla.com. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon.